Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. The Grammy Awards are going on as I speak, probably for another 30 minutes. They're usually on time. Unlike the other award shows, they tend to finish on time. But I'm doing this at 7:40 p.m. Pacific time. You know, Elton John is selling all his stuff. Speaking of Grammy winners, he is going to have 2 days of sales. Basically, session one is important photographs delving into Sir Elton John's photographic odyssey. Presumably none of the child porn will be there. A journey that began in Atlanta. Collection features significant works by renowned photographers such as Richard Avedon, Irving Penn, Diane Arbus, and Robert Frank. I saw Hockney was going to be for sale. Then there's going to be session two. Peachtree Road presents a vibrant celebration of Sir Elton John's Atlanta apartment, spotlighting Versace furnishings, art glass, contemporary art furniture, and sculpture. So basically, hey, let's just get the cash while I'm alive. We also had some other news about the Academy, the Recording Academy. According to the Los Angeles Times, the Recording Academy used non-disclosure agreements in exchange for money to keep women from talking about sexual abuse within the organization. So Joel Katz, who got the trustee award from the Academy tonight, once offered Terry McIntyre $1 million not to report alleged sexual assaults she suffered while working for the organization. McIntyre, who was once executive director of the Recording Academy's Los Angeles chapter, told the LA Times she turned down the offers and phone calls with Joel Katz. And the paper refers to a friend of McIntyre said McIntyre told them about the offer in exchange for the NDA. Now, back in December, she sued Mike Green. He was the one-time Academy president and chief executive. Sued him for rape. And he previously denied that anyone at the Recording Academy engaged in sexual misconduct. He denied McIntyre's claims and said he's going to vigorously defend against her spurious claims. That the Recording Academy has a zero-tolerance policy when it comes to sexual misconduct. Over the last 4 years, we've worked hard to change the culture. Our focus is on the future and our mission to celebrate, uplift, but most importantly, serve our music community. But you're giving the trustee award to Joel Katz. And the Times reported that at least five women told the paper they'd sign NDAs in exchange for money to keep their allegations of abuse and mistreatment quiet. The point was for people to be uncomfortable. There was one person, Joanne Gardner-Lau, who reported to Green as a senior director. She said, when I did my paperwork, Green said I had to sign an NDA. Don't do anything you don't want to get sued over. The rule at the Academy was don't speak about anything that happened within these walls. Green was reported as predator in chief. And another person, Greg Knowles, who served on the Academy's Board of Governors for 20 years. And as its LA president told the LA Times that the subject of Mike Green came up, there were a lot of NDAs. And just like so many. There was 2001, the Recording Academy paid a $650,000 settlement to an executive over harassment and abuse claim against Green. And Green stepped down in 2002. And they paid him $8 million in severance. Now, somebody who's not getting $8 million in severance, and I do wonder how much she has made over her 14 seasons as a Real Housewife, is Candy Burress. She said, hey, I'm not coming back. Nope, not coming back to Real Housewives of Atlanta. She's been on since 2009. She said, you know, and she talked about it tonight at the Grammys on the red carpet, talked to Variety about it. She says, I'm not really keeping up right now. I'm not keeping up. I decided I'm not coming back this year. It's been 14 seasons, and they allowed us to sit around for a little too long. But during that time, I started working on a lot of other things. I got some nice big projects coming soon, so I'm super excited about those things. But it's not just that. It's just like after you really have time to think, and a friend of mine was like, why do you keep doing it? And I was like, well, I think because I've just been doing it for so long, and it's easy money, it feels weird to not think not to do it. So it's just like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a break. I'm going to take a moment. I'm not coming back this year. I mean, it was pretty bad. So they're going to have like a reboot. I don't think it's going to be everybody. There's going to be some people that come back. But they did fire the showrunner and stuff, so we shall see how it goes without Candy there. You know, who won't be on it is Patrick Mahomes Sr. Okay. This guy has been arrested 6 times for DUI. That's how many times he's been arrested. How many times has he not been arrested, been pulled over? How many times has he just got away with it? He was arrested last night in Tyler, Texas for DUI. He had been arrested in March 2012, September 2012, April 2018, November 2018, March 2019. Finally got sentenced to 40 days in jail and then gets arrested now. Have you ever heard of this thing called Uber? Have you ever heard of a thing called Call a Friend? He is so lucky that nobody has died in these 6 arrests. Incredibly fortunate. 6 times. In 12 years, I mean, just, and it, like I said, how many times has he got away with it? We'll keep him with the music theme. We have a possibility, a slight possibility, that there is going to be new music from Daft Punk. Now, if you think about it, between 1997 and 2013, Daft Punk had 4 studio albums. We're not going to count Tron Legacy. But they didn't release any music of their own after Random Access Memories. That was the one in 2013. It officially broke up in 2021. But apparently back in 2018, they recorded an album. And now there's a chance it's going to come out, at least according to Quinn Smith, who is a drummer for them. He worked on Random Access Memories. And he talked about spending 4 or 5 days back in 2018 with Daft Punk. He said, it's some of my best work. And he says, I heard that it's going to be released. He says, it's supposedly coming out of the locker, and they're going to do something with it, I hope. He said he was the first person, the very first person called in to work on the Daft Punk album. And basically, he said that they recorded normal drums, experimental drums, a little bit more disco. And there was a guy named Paul Jackson Jr., who is a session guitarist who worked on a bunch of Michael Jackson records, Random Access Memories. He came in to record. And Quinn says that Daft Punk gave him permission to talk about this record. I would love to see it. And then maybe they'll go on like one big finale tour. In news that I did not expect today, you had Steph Curry dropping 60 against Atlanta. Which you know... Everybody, have you noticed in the NBA how many people are dropping like 60 and 70? It's just over the last 2 weeks, it has been insane. There's this guy on my fantasy team who had a guy who dropped 70 and a guy who dropped 60 the same night. Not going to beat him. But Steph dropped 60 in Atlanta, and front row in Atlanta is Lindsay Lohan with her husband. And apparently, Steph and Aisha are the godparents to Lindsay's kid. So Steph takes off his sweaty jersey, autographs it, and hands it over to Lindsay. Now, is this a PR move? Because Lindsay does have a movie coming out next month. So it remains to be seen. And how come we didn't know that Steph Curry was the godfather up until last night? In unsurprising news, Nicki Minaj did not win tonight. But we did find out that her social media manager is a registered child sex offender. That seems on point. Oh. Now, I think it was Friday I talked about Tariq and, you know, the gun and sitting on the driveway after Christina Hall called the cops and how he was just going to go map some trails or something. But we're finding out more and more about his book. And one of the stories he shares from his book, which would seem to be like a, you know, kind of like the preamble to all of this violence in his life. He says, hey, I grew up in a rough neighborhood. And when I was a teenager, I was involved in a gang fight got me arrested, charged with attempted murder. I spent a short time in juvenile detention center. He says, it's part of my story. We're all a product of our environment, and I grew up in that environment. And in order to thrive in that environment, you have to do certain things. And he said there was tons of fights, including this one that he shared in the book, that this one had the most extreme consequences, but he said it was not the most extreme. He said, I've been shootings, I've been in knife fights, I've been in hit in the face with a bat, you name it. But he said, look, this fight was a turning point for me. I still got in a little bit of trouble here and there, but it was a big enough incident where it made me really, really think about things. He said, at the end of my sophomore year, my parents' worst fears were realized. I was barely making C's in school, and I had a terrible attitude. My girlfriend was a senior, and I had promised to be there on the night she graduated. That same day, however, a guy I knew learned that his girlfriend had started dating someone else. I can't remember all of the details of this Romeo and Juliet story, but the guy was heartbroken and furious. So word got out, and soon both sides, my friends and the rival boyfriends, decided that scores must be settled immediately. So later that afternoon, about 15 of us went to a local park, ready to fight the rival boyfriend and his friends with our fists, or so I assumed. Minutes after we got there, it was obvious that our opponents had other plans. Two SUVs rolled up and unloaded a bunch of guys whose hands were taped up for protection. They had baseball bats and crowbars. I said, okay, I told myself we outnumber them, we have more bodies, but they have weapons. And they square off in the middle of the park. A few words were exchanged. I said, then mayhem erupted. Fists flew and so did the baseball bats. And during the free-for-all, an older guy, maybe 19 or 20, stepped toward me and swung his bat. I tried to jump out of the way, but the bat connected hard enough to break my ribs. As a reaction, I dropped my arm and knocked the bat out of his hands. I grabbed the bat and hit him in the head, and he dropped to the pavement and went unconscious. And that's what got him the attempted murder charge. This guy, he's just Mr. Violent. He's a scary, scary guy. It would not shock me if one of his relationships ended with somebody dead. Now, somebody who probably should be dead, but is not, is this Minnesota mom. 38-year-old Minnesota mom of two. Her name's Allison Lee Scarden. She's been arrested for having sex with two 15-year-olds at the same time. She was staying at a hotel, a staycation, with her family at a hotel in Roseville, Minnesota. So she got her husband. She got her two kids. And there's a boys hockey team from Colorado also staying in this hotel for a tournament. So she starts talking to these teenage boys who are members of the hockey team. They're all in the hot tub together last month in January, January 14th. The boys go back to their rooms. And this mom sent one of them a Snapchat saying she and her husband had got into a fight and she wanted to come to the boys' room. So she goes to the boys' room, she asks them how old they are, and told them that they were young enough to be her kids. She then started talking about sex and stuff, and eventually got into bed with two of the boys. And then she began sexual acts with the boy while a third teen watched. And then she asked them to perform sexual acts on her. And the two boys said they felt pressure, said, hey, you gotta go. So then she showed up at one of their hockey games, and had texted them after they returned home to Colorado. So she was arrested a couple of days ago and charged with, you know, third and fourth degree criminal sexual conduct. And she said, yeah, I kissed them. Yeah, I had some sexual contact. Yeah, I asked them for a condom, but I wasn't going to go through with it. Do you think that that is the most crazy sex story of the week? No. This is the craziest. A Bronx family court judge has been accused of approaching a plaintiff, a mom seeking custody of her child who has lost custody of her child many times. But the judge approaches the mom on a Three Fun dating platform. And this app defines itself as an option for those seeking open relationships, polyamory, and more, and it's open to couples and singles to date freely using their platform. So it's not just the Bronx family court judge, but this mom who's seeking custody of their child, she's also on this platform. And apparently, the judge hit on the mom. I don't know. Nobody knows if the judge knew that the mom was in front of her on this case. But the judge has recused herself from the case. And the judge hasn't said anything about this publicly. There's a profile of the judge that's kind of making the rounds. There's a picture of her in a black negligee. But this mom claimed that a woman by the name of Cynthia reached out to her on 3Fund with the picture of the judge. And she also wrote to her some messages in the context of approaching someone through a dating platform. Well, the judge is 47 years old. She hears domestic matters at this family court. And I guess she approached this woman in the dating app. Also sent her texts. And the judge has been a judge since 2021, reappointed in 2022, and is in charge of the Bronx County Family Court Child Protection Procedures. And her profile said, "We are a full swap couple in an ethical non-monogamy dynamic looking to have some hot, sexy fun with other full swap couples and single ladies." And the profile lists the woman as bisexual with a male partner identified only as aunt. And hopefully that is not the size of him. So everybody's looking into it. I don't feel like she's committed a crime. I don't even feel like she has committed, you know, any kind of malfeasance when it comes to this person, unless she knew that this person was in front of her. I imagine this woman, this judge, sees 100 cases a day and probably didn't make the connection because this woman, Sydney Sutherland, is not using her real name on the app. But she probably recognized the judge. But I think it's unlikely the judge recognized the woman. But that is crazy, crazy stuff. So this week, speaking of crazy stuff, we also heard from Jeffrey Epstein's accountant. It was a deposition that he had given back in May, so quite a while ago, but it's just now becoming public. And he testified that he was unaware during his employment of allegations that Epstein had sexually abused all these teenage girls and young women. I don't know how I feel about this, because he was Epstein's accountant for 14 years, and that he had learned about the worst of Epstein's activities only after his death. You didn't Google your client? You didn't know why he was in prison before? You didn't know why he was arrested? What? And the deposition was taken in connection with a class action lawsuit that accused J.P. Morgan of having facilitated Epstein's sex trafficking during the years he was a customer. And J.P. Morgan agreed last year to pay about $300 million to 200 victims. But basically, the accountant, Richard Kahn, said that he and Darren Indyke, you know, they were responsible for managing Epstein's business affairs. And Kahn hasn't really talked publicly about his time with Epstein. But he had said during the deposition that he had met with him at least once every 3 weeks, but that he never did Epstein's taxes. But Kahn and Indyke were the ones who were named co-executors of the estate, which was worth about $600 million. And now apparently it's worth about $40 million. But Kahn said that he didn't know how much cash had been kept in a safe at his Manhattan office to reimburse or pay some of Epstein's employees and female associates. Kahn had described them as being Epstein's assistants. And he said, "No, you know, I wasn't directly involved with paying the women. You know, these women that would run errands for Epstein and travel with him." He did say that he had helped a few women open bank accounts and that Epstein would sometimes have Kahn run itemized reports detailing a particular woman's spending habits. And there have been lawsuits against Epstein's estate that have charged that he pressured six women to marry each other so that way their immigration status would be okay. And Khan said, well, you know, I know that several women associated with Epstein had married each other, but I don't know the details. And he also said he didn't know whether Epstein had arranged the same-sex marriages. And he said he had he prepared tax returns for one of the couples, but now all of the couples have since divorced. Well, not divorced, and probably should never be married. Let's put Jacob Elordi, well, we're not going to put him in the same category as Tariq. But, you know, he was involved in an altercation outside an Australian hotel, and it was not the first time that he has ever been involved in an altercation. He's at a hotel in Sydney, Australia. He's been there a couple hours, and then he gets into an argument with KISS FM radio employee Joshua Fox. So the radio employee said, hey, you know, I he supposedly approached Jacob Elordi for a comment in front of this hotel. Nobody knows if he was at, okay, we know now. But at the time the first report came out, we didn't know if he was actually working for KISS or, you know, for them or just an employee. But Elordi took offense at one of the questions, and there was a fight kind of that broke out around 3:30 p.m. yesterday. Now, Fox went on KISS FM to talk about it. And he said that he was waiting for Jacob to leave the venue before approaching him. And that the radio station employee, like I said, his name is Joshua Fox. He asked the actor for a sample of his bath water as a gift for radio host Jackie O. Henderson. And of course, it's just referencing, you know, Saltburn, and which another character drinks Elordi's used bath water. And so what happened was he said that Jacob got up in his face, backed him up against a wall, and then two of Jacob's friends, male friends, surrounded him on either side, preventing Fox from stepping away. And he said, I was feeling quite intimidated that, and I'm thinking something's going to happen here because I can't move. They're all surrounding me against this wall. And then he claimed that Jacob demanded that he delete footage of the incident. So Fox said, okay. That he obliged and deleted the file, but when Elordi then asked him to delete it from his recently deleted files folder, Fox refused. Because he says, I'm thinking if I delete this footage, there's no evidence that this encounter happened. And he claimed that Jacob started acting aggressively and Fox felt intimidated by the situation. And that Jacob flipped and then pushed him against the wall, grabbed him by the throat. And at that point, one of Jacob's two male friends jumped in to pull the actor off of him. And then Fox said he quickly walked back towards this pub, and then one of Jacob's friends followed him and demanded that he not talk to the press. He said, make sure that video goes nowhere. Make sure you tell no one about this, making me shake his hand. Of course, the audio from the run-in was played this morning on the Kyle and Jackie O show. And it goes like this. In the video, you can hear Fox and talking and ask for the bathwater. And Jacob goes, you're kidding. And then asks, are you filming? And Fox says, yeah. And he goes, can you not? And then, like I said, he was able to retrieve it, the part that he deleted. And Jackie said, when Josh heard that Jacob was one of the hotels nearby on Saturday afternoon, he went down there. He didn't want to invade his privacy, so he didn't go inside the hotel. He waited outside. And apparently, Fox thought it would be funny to give him this Tupperware container that said Jacob's bathwater. But Jacob didn't like it. And also, something that's not likable is Alabama Barker. Yeah, she's fine. But she had one of her, actually two watches stolen. She took a Patek Philippe and a Cartier watch to Fat Burger in Burbank, took them off in the bathroom, and apparently they were stolen. I don't know if she left them behind. She said that there's a reward. She posted a bunch of pictures of all the stuff. Why are you taking that much bling to a Fat Burger in Burbank? It's because you want people to notice you. I'm sorry that they got stolen. I mean, that's horrible. But why just draw attention to yourself? Why be so flashy? Just be an 18-year-old. You just turned 18. Now, some interesting news from the Grammys tonight. Killer Mike was handcuffed and escorted by police out of the Grammy Awards after he had just won three of them during the pre-televised portion of the ceremony. He won in all three categories: Best Rap Song, Best Rap Performance, and Best Rap Album. And he was basically, he got into some physical fight with a security guard at the event. At this point in time, I don't know if he's been arrested or was just detained, but we're going to find out. I would also like to find out why Kyle Richards was front and center at a Morgan Wade concert Saturday night, last night in Tennessee. There's only like 100 people. She's in a second row seat, and there's pictures of her just holding up the camera and just right on Morgan for the whole thing. And what made it really sad is that Morgan, in between some of the songs, acknowledged her family, who were also in the crowd, not seated anywhere next to Kyle. And Morgan didn't mention Kyle at all. So take that how you want. Okay, the Grammys, obviously, a lot of people watch them. A lot of people try and get attention. Yes, I'm looking at Jennifer Lopez with your Versace dress. Taylor Swift, though, you've already got all the attention in the world. You already have kajillion followers on every social media account. Why do you have to also steal the spotlight at the Grammys from other people who are maybe not as popular as you? But that's what she did. She confirmed that her 11th studio album, The Tortured Poets Department, is coming out on April 19th. And she announced it during the award for Best Pop Vocals. She goes, "The way I can celebrate is by telling you a secret that I've been keeping you for the past 2 years, which is that my brand new album comes out April 19th. It's called The Tortured Poets Department, and I'm going to post the cover right now backstage." And above the photo, "And so I enter into evidence my tarnished coat of arms. My muses acquired like bruises, my talismans and charms, the tick, tick, tick of love bombs, my view of pitch black ink, all's fair in." Why do you gotta just suck the oxygen out of the room? You know, I get it. And, you know, you've been plugging this and plugging this quietly, silently, all the way back to like Cruel Summer. Right? Remember when that came out and there's the photos and Taylor held up one finger and Jack Antonoff had, you know, 10, and everybody's like, "Oh my gosh, it's her 11th album." Well, you could have announced it back in October, but no, you waited. She did it at the Grammys instead of the Super Bowl. But here's the thing. A lot of fans were convinced that she wasn't going to release this album until after the Eras Tour. And you know why? Because everybody's going to be ticked. Think about this. Think about the whole Eras Tour, and you're going to add a whole bunch of songs to the set list, which means everybody who's been looking forward to this or this and this, they're not going to get them. So yeah, I guess the European Tour and Australian, well, not Australian because it hasn't happened yet, but in the summertime, the European Tour, the album will have been released. So is she just going to change the whole thing for Europe? You know, people are excited to hear this or that, and now all of a sudden, no. But my big thing is, why do it at the Grammys? Why? Let the other people have a space. Let other people have a tiny sliver of, you know, publicity for themselves. And you just take it all away. I just find that to be just too over the top. You don't need to do that. People are going to buy your record. You don't need to announce it at the Grammys. Well, you know, last year, Lizzo won Record of the Year, right? For About Damn Time. And she's been trying to get this whole sexual harassment, discrimination, and other claims tossed from court. And then what happened this week is that Superior Court Judge Mark Epstein, no relation, basically said, you're going to have to stand trial on most of it. He said it's dangerous for the court to weigh in ham-fisted into constitutionally protected activity, but it is equally dangerous to turn a blind eye to allegations of discrimination or other forms of misconduct merely because they take place in a speech-related environment. So now Lizzo is going to have a trial next year. My guess is that she'll probably settle, because Marty Singer's not cheap. But it's three people: Ariana Davis, Crystal Williams, and Noel Rodriguez. and, you know, basically have made all these accusations. Now, Epstein said that a nude photo shoot conducted for Watch Out for the Big Girls is protected under free speech. And that claim, as well as others connected to body shaming, employment, soft hold, and the trio being put through self-described excruciating auditions for the jobs, also fall under the protection of the First Amendment. But there's a lot of stuff that's not. So Lizzo's going to court. So in complete opposite antithesis to Tarek's book, there is a book from filmmaker Edward Zwick. He's the guy who directed Blood Diamonds. And he had a Leo story. And he said that in this book, Hits, Flops, and Other Illusions, My 40-something Years in Hollywood, he said, you know, he goes to the set of the movie, and Leo was between gorgeous girlfriends. And one morning, I walked into the makeup trailer, as I often did, to discuss the day's work with him. And I found him in the chair waiting for his turn and noticed he was paging through a Victoria's Secret catalog. He said, what are you doing? And Jennifer Connelly was there and said, shopping. There is your Leo DiCaprio story. The Shannon Doherty, Alyssa Milano, Holly Marie Combs feud is not going anywhere. So Alyssa's at MegaCon Orlando and talked about it because she was asked about, did you get Shannon fired from Charmed? And she said, I knew this was going to come up in one way or another. I want to be very thoughtful in how I respond to any of this. And I will just say that I'm sad. I don't think it's really that I'm sad for me or my life or how it does or does not affect my life. She was sad because the toxicity from the show has continued even decades later. And I'm the most sad for the fans. I'm the most sad that a show that has meant so much to so many people has been tarnished by a toxicity that is still to this day, almost of a quarter century later, still happening. So obviously she knew somebody was going to ask a question and has all of this memorized. I'm sad that people can't move past it. I'm sad that we all can't just celebrate the success of a show that meant so much to all of us. That's because you got somebody fired. So they're not celebrating it. And she said that she worked through her trauma. And I've worked super hard in my life in the last 25 years to heal all of my trauma. And that's not just all the trauma that I experienced while shooting, but all of my trauma. I've worked really hard to heal the bits because I understand that hurt people, and my intention is to be a healed person that helps heal people. What? We all know that Alyssa got Shannon fired. Period. Even she said, I did not have the power to get anyone fired. Yeah, she did. Can you imagine your first day of going to a recording studio? You're excited. It's your first day. And you're meeting Jam Master Jay. And you're a teenager. And you got an appointment through a relative. And you're just excited. You know, you're going to meet this guy from Run DMC. And you're in there. And the next thing you know, the guy is shot dead. Well, on Thursday, Yara Concepcion testified in the trial of two men charged in the 2002 killing of Jam Master Jay. She was one of several people in various parts of the studio that night. And she recalled seeing Jam Master Jay on the studio floor. She said, I knew he was gone, but I just had to try to see if he was alive. And his, you know, this happened in 2002, but they didn't arrest anybody until 2020. And so that's why the trial is just going on now. As Carl Jordan Jr. and Ronald Washington, and they pleaded not guilty. But prosecutors say that Washington brandished a gun and blocked the door, and that Jordan fired on Jam Master Jay, and that it was brought on because of a drug dealing beef. And a cousin of Jay testified also Thursday that Washington asked for bullets days before the shooting and warned that something bad is going to happen at the studio. And Jay was nervous about something too and started carrying a gun shortly before he was killed. And in hours after slaying, Washington was an old friend of Jay's and was living on the sofa at Jay's house, returned to the house with a bottle of Hennessy and said, don't throw away this bottle because this is the last bottle that Jay drank out of. And one of Washington's lawyers suggested that the comment was his way of showing or communicating a connection to Jay. Now, Concepcion didn't see the shooting. She didn't implicate Jordan or Washington because she didn't see it. But she secures this appointment at the studio via a relative who knew people in Jay's circle. She says she arrived and met the, you know, the DJ in the studio's lounge area. But he said he didn't have time for her that evening. And after she countered that she had traveled a long way and wanted to be heard, Jay's business partner and another associate took her into the adjoining control room to hear her sing. And she was in the middle of her second song when she heard the door close and the sounds of like tussling is what she said. And then two gunshots went off. Boom, boom. And she said, that's when I started getting frantic. And she thought of her toddler son and afraid there'd be gunfire in the control room next. So she tried to kick out an air conditioner and escape through the window. Then she hid behind a couch. And once she heard people in the lounge talking about calling the police, she came out holding her heart. And Jay's on the floor, arm over his head. And she goes, where did Jay get shot? And she asked one of his assistants, who had himself been shot in the leg. And she said she asked him to help her check Jay's pulse. So the two moved his arm, and he had been shot in the head. And she told jurors, you know, I'm sorry, I can't talk about stuff like this. And she starts crying and everything. And then talks about all the particulars of what they saw. I mean, that is a crazy first day on the job. All right, you guys, you head back to the Grammys. It should be over by now. And tomorrow, all day long, tips, blinds, all the way to later in the afternoon. Tomorrow also, daily dive, got some other stuff. It'll be great. I will talk to you guys later.